This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed.
This week's podcast is brought to you by BHP. Copper is a big deal in the energy transition because it's used to make electric vehicles, wind turbines, and solar panels. When it comes to producing copper responsibly, it's happening now at BHP. Nuclear power has been back in the news lately, with the Coalition announcing it wants to be part of Australia's energy mix. It's far from a new idea, and while lots of countries have embraced it as a way to generate their power cleanly and cheaply, we're still having the debate. So in this Squiz shortcut, we'll look at what nuclear power is, how it could work in Australia, and whether it could be a realistic solution for our energy needs. Squiz Shortcuts is the backstory to the big news stories. I'm Alice Dempster.
And I'm Siobhan Moran-McFarlane.
Siobhan, after years of political argy-bargy about climate change and how we're going to generate enough electricity to keep the lights on, Australia's two major parties have agreed that we need to radically reduce our emissions in order to meet our climate targets. But we need to agree on a way to do it.
This has been an issue bubbling away for decades, and the Coalition has pushed several times in the past for nuclear power to be part of Australia's energy mix. We know Anthony Albanese's government is all about transition from coal to renewable energy sources like wind and solar. But Coalition leader Peter Dutton has again raised the possibility of nuclear power for Australia by building nuclear reactors on the sites of existing coal stations.
Yeah, and if you're like a lot of us and a bit vague about nuclear power, let's start with what it is and how it's produced. This will be a bit of a chemistry lesson for Squizzes, Siobhan, so lab coats at the ready. Nuclear energy is found in the nucleus, or the core, of atoms, which are the tiny particles that make up all matter in the universe. And to make electricity, energy has to be released from those atoms.
And that's done in one of two ways: nuclear fission or nuclear fusion. The one we're interested in is fission, and that's where the atoms are split apart and turned into heat, which boils water and produces steam. The steam then turns huge turbines, which drive generators to make electricity.
Yeah, that's right. And afterwards, the steam is cooled back down into water, which can be used again and again. One of the good things about nuclear-generated power is that it produces no harmful greenhouse gases, and it's extremely efficient. One tiny uranium fuel pellet creates as much energy as one tonne of coal, 560 litres of oil, or 13.5 cubic metres of natural gas.
And just a bit about uranium. It's used because its atoms are the easiest of all the elements to split during fission, which is done in a nuclear reactor with lots of safety measures in place.
And Siobhan, safety is a thing that comes up again and again with nuclear energy. Mm. Basically, the uranium needs to be kept cool because if it melts, it can cause radioactive material to be released. And that's extremely toxic and dangerous to people and the environment. So the waste produced by that process is radioactive and it has to be carefully stored.
Yeah, the world's grappled with how best to do that, and plenty of options have been investigated. Mm-hmm. At one stage, America even looked at launching it into outer space. But the safest agreed way is to store it underwater for at least 5 years, and after that in dry storage deep underground.
That's right. And despite the dangers, more than 50 countries around the world get at least some of their electricity from nuclear energy.
Yeah, so 32 of those countries operate their own nuclear reactors, and some import the energy from their neighbours. Countries who've embraced nuclear energy include the UK, the US, Canada, China, and Russia. But only five nations, Ukraine, Slovakia, Belgium, Hungary, and France, use their own nuclear power plants to generate the majority of their electricity needs.
And fun fact, Siobhan, France has the highest output. Nuclear covers 70% of its power generation. So when you add it all up, around 10% of the world's electricity is now sourced from nuclear power plants, and some nations are looking for more.
So this year, the US, India, and the UAE are getting in on the action with new or expanding nuclear power programs, and more reactors are scheduled to be built in China and Russia next year.
And it's worth noting that the countries that operate nuclear power plants have a raft of protections in place, and most have signed on to an international agreement called the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. That stipulates the peaceful use of nuclear energy and prevents the spread of nuclear nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and the link between nuclear power generation and nuclear weapons is a big one. The main thing to note is the process of making nuclear power produces a byproduct called plutonium, which is used in nuclear weapons. And some anti-nuclear campaigners believe the spread of nuclear power plants puts the world at more of a risk of another nuclear attack.
Yeah, which would be catastrophic. And if you've watched Oppenheimer recently, you'll know what I mean. It depicts the development of the nuclear warhead used by the US in the horrific bombing of Hiroshima at the end of World War II, which killed 200,000 Japanese people. And there have been other nuclear-related disasters, not even involving weapons, Siobhan.
Absolutely. In 1986, an explosion in a nuclear reactor in Chernobyl in Ukraine killed 28 people and injured 100, while the UN has predicted that up to 11,000 people could die from cancers caused by radiation sickness linked to that disaster. And in 2011, a radiation leak at a reactor in Fukushima, Japan, contaminated the environment and forced 164,000 people to relocate.
So, all of that to say, nuclear energy is dangerous stuff. And the uranium used to generate it is a non-renewable resource, meaning there's only so much on the planet. Australia does happen to have a lot of it, so there's long been debates about Australia getting into nuclear power. So, we'll get into that next. A message now from our podcast partner, BHP. We hear a lot about the transition to renewable energy, but not so much about how it's actually going to be achieved. That's why BHP is raising awareness about its efforts to not only produce essential resources for the transition, like copper, but also reduce the greenhouse gas emissions it produces in the production of those resources. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements to help power their copper mine at Olympic Dam in South Australia. It's happening now at BHP. And you can find out more by visiting bhp.com/critical. At the moment, we don't use nuclear power at all for electricity here in Australia. In fact, there are laws against it. So instead, we get around 61% of our power from coal and gas, and renewables like wind and solar make up the remaining 39%.
So you can see that means there's still a lot of work to do if the government is going to hit that target of net zero emissions by 2050.
And just on that target, the Albanese government has committed to cutting our emissions to 43% of those in 2005 by the year 2030. That's by the end of this decade, for anyone who still feels like it's the early 2000s.
Yes, time is flying, Alice. And as for the coalition, leader Peter Dutton has stopped short of agreeing to that 2030 target, but he says they're committed to achieving the 2050 goal of net zero emissions. Dutton says switching to nuclear power would rapidly cut Australia's emissions and cost of living while saving us from falling behind the rest of the G20, which, just a quick reminder, is a group of nations who represent some of the world's major economies, all of which are using nuclear power to generate at least some of their electricity.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time that the idea of nuclear power has been floated in Australia. It's been debated since the 1950s when our first and only nuclear reactor was built in Lucas Heights, New South Wales.
So in 1970, the coalition government under John Gorton was set to build a nuclear power station in Jervis Bay in New South Wales, but the price tag, an exorbitant $2.4 million, put off governments that followed, and the plan was axed in favour of coal-powered generation plants.
And then came the Chernobyl disaster, so the world was a bit spooked and attitudes against nuclear power in Australia hardened.
And then in 1998, Greens senator and environmentalist Bob Brown lobbied the Howard government to ban any future development of nuclear power plants in Australia through an amendment to our nuclear law.
At this point, if you're wondering what goes on at the Lucas Heights reactor, given it's a working nuclear facility that doesn't produce power, it's mostly used now for research and for making the radioactive dye, which is used to diagnose cancers and other diseases.
And there are plans to turn it into a large-scale nuclear medicine factory by the mid-2030s. It's also where the majority of Australia's nuclear waste is stored.
Yeah, but none of that is to the scale that Dutton has in mind. So Siobhan, what do we know about the Coalition's nuclear policy?
Well, there's not a lot of detail available, other than the Coalition backs a plan to replace the current network of coal-fired power stations with small, modular nuclear reactors. That's certainly what Dutton originally said, but lately he's widened that to conventionally sized reactors, and most of them are earmarked for seats currently held by Liberal or National MPs.
So there's a list of where these might be located?
Well, not yet, Alice. And look, not all of Dutton's colleagues are happy about that. There have been reports saying some Coalition MPs won't support the policy, or for that matter, a nuclear reactor in their electorates if their constituents are against it.
But for Dutton's part, he's confident community attitudes to nuclear energy have changed. He's banking on poll results that show young Australians aged 18 to 34 years old support the use of small nuclear reactors to replace coal. And an average of 55% of all voters are in favour of the idea. But the government's not on board, Siobhan.
No, it's not. Energy Minister Chris Bowen says Dutton's plan is, and these are his words, fantasy wrapped in a delusion accompanied by a pipe dream. And there's no way Australia can make nuclear happen in time to meet our climate targets.
Yeah, so just on that timing, Dutton says we can go nuclear by the mid-2030s, and he's used the United Arab Emirates as an example of a country that's taken 10 years to build its new reactor. But experts in the field have pointed out that the UAE is an autocracy that brought in workers from undeveloped countries to achieve that.
Yeah, there are a lot of hurdles to clear and a lot of ifs involved. And we're not going to know the finer details of Dutton's energy plan until after the May budget. So for the moment, the nation is forging ahead with the Albanese government's plan of replacing coal energy with renewables and keeping nuclear power restricted to a few submarines that we've ordered.
Yeah, of course, they're the nuclear submarines being built for Australia through the AUKUS security deal. They'll be powered by nuclear energy using small onboard reactors to generate power without relying on diesel fuel or batteries.
And to be clear, they're not going to contain nuclear weapons, but the deal does require Australia to manage and store the nuclear waste generated from those subs.
Yeah, the government says that will be done at defence sites right around the country. And that's your shortcut to nuclear power. On to our recommendations. Each shortcut, we like to give you recommendations for further reading, listening and watching. I'm going to recommend an article by Michelle Grattan, published in The Conversation and the ABC, which gives a bit of historical context for the Coalition's nuclear policy and why it's an unusual one for Dutton.
And I'm going to recommend a podcast episode called Could Australia Go Nuclear? From The Guardian's Full Story, which gives a good idea of the numbers and the time needed to go nuclear. And if you're keen for a watching recommendation, we've already talked about Oppenheimer, but there's a series that came out a few years ago called Chernobyl, which is a drama all about that particular disaster and how it unfolded. It's really good, and you can check that out on Binge.
Yeah, good one. I'll put those links in the episode notes. Thank you for listening, and please remember to share this episode with your mates who want to get across the big stories happening in the news. Until next time.
G'day, Kate Watson here, host of the News Club podcast, the place to go for conversations about the news. Never have we done an interview that has garnered so much positive feedback. I'm referring to my chat with Bernie Shakeshaft. He's the founder of Backtrack, a community-led organisation with a simple mission: keep kids alive, keep them out of jail, and help them chase their dreams. In the context of youth crime being a big news topic, I wanted to give you a chance to hear about his approach. Here's a snippet. Talk to me about that relationship between authorities and these kids, because they're already interacted at some level in most cases, as I understand it.
Yeah, let me take you back to the start, because when we first started, the coppers were going, oh, here we go. Every damn criminal in Armidale is going to be down here, bags not being their neighbours, and the cops would drive in and the kids would go out over the back fence, and this just went on for years, and it was just like, this is getting so stupid. So I sat with a good mate of mine. It wasn't always easy, I can tell you. He was the inspector, so one of the most senior cops, and I went, this is just stupid. Like, you know, you got a kid coming in here with 14 offences for riding his push bike. Let's just stop it. Hasn't been quick, but I doubt there would be another community in Australia that has as good a relationship with the police as we have with these 5% of rough and tumble kids that are in every single town. So those coppers come down here, but they make the coffee, and it's senior cops, and it's detectives, and it's the Aboriginal liaison officer, and it's the junior constable. And now you can see this relationship. When the kids do, they've got a little social enterprise going, car washing, you know, where they might have 50 cars to wash in a day or whatever, and people come down and have a coffee and a biscuit and a chat while they get their car washed. And so do the police, bring the highway patrol car down there and watch that. And when the dog squad come through, and like everyone in town, you watch it light up on social media, you know, don't know what's going on. There's like 20 cop cars down there at Backtrack. Shit must have
just
really
getting their cars washed.
Yep. Or goofing around with the dogs, you know. And once you break that stuff down, it really makes a difference, you know.
To listen to the whole interview, just search for News Club in your podcast app.